Are you ready to become toxic person proof?
Hey guys, Sarah K. Ramsey here to help you find love and success after a toxic relationship so you can design a life you're actually excited about living.
Hello, wonderful. It is Sarah, and I'm here with Dr. Alice Kirby, who specializes in somatic experiencing trauma therapy and resiliency coaching. So if there's like a movie playing in your head that you can't seem to turn off, or your nervous system and body like seem out of whack and can't seem to unwind past patterns of trauma and chronic stress, this is her specialty. Hey, how are you, Alice?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you, Sarah?
Awesome. Did I explain your work well, or do you want to add anything?
I could talk about it for a really long time. I would just say that a lot of us are in this sort of constant stress pattern, is particularly with COVID, and even in general, our society really almost gives accolades for those that like push the hardest and you can sleep when you're dead. And honestly, that kind of mindset and behavior is extremely detrimental to our systems, where we start running on like fatigue, and that can lead to burnout and other difficult things. And really, it can lead to us just being completely dissociated or detached from ourselves, from our humanness, from who we actually are on the planet. So a lot of my work is really focused on, all right, let's slow down a little bit and work with your physiology and your nervous system and see what's happening below the level of your very smart brain trying to run the show here. And so it's really helpful for chronic stress when there is past trauma, and particularly with COVID, being able to build resiliency within our system so that we are better adapted to handle times like this and to get through them without having PTSD, you know, six months down the line, without having big blowups with our friends and our partners, without needing to like crawl in the bed and just pull the covers up. So this is just a little bit more details.
Yeah, so how do we do that? Walk me through an exercise. If I just can't seem to turn off my thoughts, and it's like, I can distract myself, but then it always keeps coming back. What are some steps I can take to stop that?
Sure. So it's definitely, there's two ways to look at it. And one way is to do some of the deeper trauma work, which I recommend doing with a practitioner, someone who's trained in somatic experiencing, EMDR therapy, some kind of trauma resolution therapy. And that will help a lot because that starts to shift these patterns that have been ingrained for a long time, that have been born out of survival states. And I mean, the good news for everyone too, is we can also start working with kind of a twofold pathway of both expanding the good and of taking the time to really notice what's good in our lives and how that feels. And then also kind of pulling and tending to some of the weeds in our garden. So we're planting the flowers and we're pulling the weeds. But one really nice way that I like to begin this work with people, or just to do a little practice we can do right now, as you requested, is to start coming into our body and to drop out of our minds and to start noticing what's happening in our sensory systems. So for anyone listening right now, and if you'd like to try this, Sarah, you can just take a minute. You can close your eyes if you like, and just start becoming aware of your breathing. And this isn't an invitation to change your breath. Just let it be however it is. But just notice it. Notice the movement of air in and out of your nostrils. Notice maybe the gentle rise and fall of your chest. You can be aware if there's any movement in your abdomen. And just taking a few breath cycles to really stop and notice what's happening. And then I'll invite you to bring your attention to the surface of your skin. And you can notice if there's a breeze or a fan, maybe a heater. There's anything like that blowing on your skin, making contact, light contact with your skin. Or you can simply feel the fabric of your clothing on your skin. And just take a minute and notice what this is like. Again, we're not trying to change anything or accomplish anything. We're simply observing what's actually there. And then you can bring your awareness to the inside of your mouth and working a little bit with the sensation of taste. You can notice if there's a lot of saliva in your mouth, or maybe your mouth is dry. notice if maybe you recently ate something or took a drink of something, if there's a lingering flavor in your mouth. Again, just noticing what's there and what's actually present. And then you can move upwards to your nose and notice if there's anything that you're smelling in your environment. You could take a minute here and notice what's in your immediate environment and then what's just a little bit further away. And then as you're engaging with your sense of smell, you can again just observe the flow of air, the flow of your breath moving into and out of your nostrils. And then you can bring your attention to your auditory sense, to your ears. You can notice the sound of my voice in the foreground. You can see if you can reach out with your senses, so to speak, with your sense of hearing, and notice any sounds that are coming to you from further away. And again, just notice what you're hearing. And if you find yourself getting distracted as we walk through the senses, you can always recalibrate and bring your attention back to your breathing, back to that area just beneath your nose, and simply observe the flow of air into and out of your nostrils. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes, and I'm going to invite you to do a practice called orienting with your vision as we wrap up this practice. So go ahead and almost let your eyes sink back into your head so that you have a soft gaze. Let things come into your field of vision and then just look around your environment, and I'll do it with you. Let your eyes be drawn to anything they're naturally drawn to. Notice what pleases them or pulls them in. Notice where they want to linger or settle. Just taking in your environment through your visual sense. And then as we wrap up this practice, you just do sort of an overall check-in with your body. Notice how you're feeling. How was that for you, Sarah? Did you notice anything?
Awesome. I noticed that I've been writing my book all day and my back is stiff. I think you're standing up right now, aren't you? Do you have a stand-up? Yes, that's much wiser than...
It's a crank, so I can stand it up or sit down, but I've been standing a lot today.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's way better. No, that was great. And I think after the context of a toxic relationship, we pay so much attention to them. Mm-hmm. We're so aware of their needs, their moods, their wants, their desires. And that exercise really forces us in a good way, in a good force, mm-hmm. right? In a good force, to bring our attention back to us at the very simplest forms, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And to really be present with ourselves and not just in a hyper, because I imagine with any kind of a toxic relationship, you've been on some kind of high alert. Your Absolutely. Body has been in a high sympathetic response state. Your fight or flight system has been active for probably a long time. So things like this that bring us back into more of our body and back into more of a parasympathetic state are huge just to start getting our footing as who we are as people again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And does it, what advice would you give to someone who felt like, oh, I did it three times and it didn't work? Like what timeline, if we're starting to practice things like mindfulness, mm-hmm. yoga, coming back into our body, as long as doing work with a professional as well, but what kind of advice would you give? Cause I hear a lot in my own life. It's like, why is that working faster? How does that work?
I mean, it's a tough question because it is really dependent on the person, on have you had professional therapy? Because if you're trying to do mindfulness, but your body is in this constant fight or flight state because you've been in an underlying trauma situation for the past 10 years, mm-hmm. you probably want to see a practitioner, because it's like then you're fighting, you're telling your brain, like, we're going to be positive, we're going to do this. But your nervous system and the actual survival part of you is screaming something else, is screaming like, we're not safe, we're not okay. Mm-hmm. And there's just, it's really good to work with someone. That being said, I think 30 days, if we're consistent with something, we'll typically see some type of change. 3 months is a really beautiful time period. If we can stay with something on a regular basis. You know, I'm a big fan of do what you can actually do. If it's every other day that you get to do a practice, if you spend 5 minutes, Dr. Rick Hansen recommended spending 1 minute with your breath a day, if that's all you can do. And I'm like, okay, that's doable. You know, I can do that. I can do it 1 minute. So do what you can do.
Rick Hansen is Buddha's brain. He's the author of Buddha's Brain. They hear me talk about that book a lot. So I want to, if they've heard me mention.
I love it. You know him. I love Rick Hansen.
Yes.
I'm like a groupie.
Well, they hear me talk about that book all the time. So I was like, wait, I need to make a connection. That's great. Yes.
He's got a ton of really wonderful, small, simple practices too. I refer people to his website a lot. I think 30 days is a good sort of trial if you want to run an experiment on yourself, which I'm a big fan of looking at things like that. Like, let's see if this works, trial and error. But then three months.
That's so important. That is so important. And you know, a lot of the ladies I'm working with, they talk about dating or they talk about new parenting skills or new boundary skills. And it's like, try it. If it doesn't work, try something else. There really are no shortcuts to that process in life. No. And that's an important point to make. So what about if we have trouble sleeping? Like if we're, you know, been busy at work and avoided the movie in our head, but then it's, you know, we got to be quiet. We have to go to sleep. What do you recommend there? Because I'm pretty sure it's not getting drunk and falling asleep in front of Netflix. Like I want to...
I work a lot with sober women because I'm sober myself. So I definitely would say if that's the only way you can sleep, that could be potentially problematic.
Potentially problematic. She's been very kind. Potentially problematic. Yeah.
I know for me, like that was a huge part of my issue. I had terrible anxiety and then I had horrible insomnia and I was just like, I'll just drink. That'll help. Worked a little bit for a while and then really it didn't. So definitely finding other tools is really useful. I interviewed a sleep specialist a little while ago, and I really like one of the things that she said, which is to have a period of time in between doing and sleeping. And this doesn't have to be a big period of time. It can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but have a period of time just for being. Mm-hmm. And that can involve, and then the other piece that I really like, and I sort of will roll into this being period of time, is to have little sleep rituals. And particularly if they can involve things like essential oils that help to trigger your brain, or tea, like chamomile tea or oat straw is a really lovely calming herb. It's a nerving, so it actually works on the nervous system to calm us down. And a lot of people don't know about that one.
So I don't know about that one. And I'm pretty into supplements. So what is it?
It's called oat straw. It's just an herb. You can buy it bulk or I don't really ever see it in tea bags.
Yeah. I just made that note for myself. Yeah. So I will remember oat straw.
Mix it with chamomile. It doesn't taste that great. It's kind of bland, but it really helps to calm you down at the end of the day.
Do you do magnesium as well?
Sometimes I have that magnesium calm supplement thing. I've been sleeping really well lately. So I haven't lately. I've been just tired. Physical activity during the day is good to sort of wear you out. But I understand that, you know, when you lay down and your brain is just mental gymnastics. So creating a little bit of time and space, you know, try to not do screens an hour before bed if you can, or even if it's 20 minutes before bed. But again, have a little bit of separation between working or dinner or dishes or whatever, where you just sort of sit and let your body. That's a great time to do this five senses practice, honestly. Come back into your body, then go lay down.
Yeah. And what we did earlier was the five senses practice. We had talked about that before we went. I'm not sure if we introduced it, but it was awesome. She was like, let's go. And I was like, great.
Let's do it. Close your eyes, people. Let's go into our bodies.
I'm obviously practiced meditation and Dr. Joe Spencer and some of that. So I was like, oh, cool. We can do that. So to recap thus far, five senses exercise. Learning to get the focus off our worries, our concerns, and back onto our physical sense, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, back into our senses.
Yeah, back into our senses. And then the, you know, physical side of sleep as well. If it tends to be an issue right before we go to sleep, having something in between doing and sleeping. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. Right? Yeah. So what if we wake up in a mess? Like, you know, our subconscious kicks in during sleep and we actually wake up either in the middle of the night or in the morning more nervous or upset than even when we went to sleep.
Yeah, this is definitely common. And it's, again, another thing I experienced as well quite a bit. And then one of the things, because I'm such a body-based technician and practitioner, a lot of my tools are around the body. But one of the things that I find has worked well for me and for my clients is if you are still laying in bed, again, to bring your awareness back into your body. And so as you're laying there, start with your feet and notice your heels on the bed. Notice what it's like to have the support of the mattress. Notice the contact between the heel of your skin and the mattress. Notice the back of your legs and just work your way up the body and really both let yourself sink into the support and feel supported. Because honestly, sometimes just giving ourselves over to a physical sense of being supported like that is really helpful.
It's really helpful and can be really scary. And if anybody's listening to this right now and they're like, and if you've not been through any type of like physical trauma, like you'd be listening to this and go, what do you mean? What do you mean you're worried about your bed supporting you? But we get in that hypervigilant state, right?
Where absolutely. It's like,
I have nothing to count on but myself, you know, right. And I can't let my guard down. Or I use the term crocodiles. Oh, that was in Rick Hansen's book, right? The scene of the beach and the beautiful water. And then there's a crocodile. And so the one thing we focus on is the crocodile rather than the
absolutely
around us.
Yes. Bias in our brain. Yep.
Yeah. Which goes back. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that's such a great point because when we are in those really hyper traumas, high sympathetic states for long periods of time, it's not safe to be in our bodies or it doesn't feel safe. So again, that's when I really recommend find a practitioner who's skilled in some kind of trauma work. Mm-hmm. Work with them for 6 months, you know, mm-hmm. and you will mm-hmm. notice a difference. Mm-hmm.
So how do you learn some ways to, like, I remember my own life, like just literally reminding myself, look, you're safe here. And the kind of a senses thing, like, is there a crocodile around? Like, is there a crocodile? Mm-hmm. And sometimes in our lives there actually are crocodiles, you know. You know, people who are crocodiles or whatnot, or situations. And what I find with so many women and men too, I don't really work with men, but I'm sure it can be. It's like there's a crocodile in our life that could hurt us and we ignore it. And then we move away and then there's a crocodile in our head that we ruminate on. And it creates this real like cognitive dissonance of like, oh, you know, it's that situation at work isn't that bad. They're not really bothering me that much. My mom's criticisms don't bother me that much. You know, we allow these crocodiles to bite us because we don't want to do change in our life. We don't want to face the music. But then we try to go to sleep. We try to do this and it's ruminate. What advice would you give to someone doing that? Because I hear that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think along the same lines, it's you've got to accept that change is probably necessary and having boundaries, developing boundaries, whether that's working with the coach or working with the therapist. But I think with boundaries, we have this idea collectively that it means like keeping people out, or we have to have these mm-hmm. like hard walls around us. And for me, the way that I always start boundary work is to like come into ourselves more so that mm-hmm. I know where I begin and where I end, both my physical boundary and my peripersonal space. I have a really clear idea of this. I know what my yes is. I know what my no is. I know how this feels in my body. And when we're able to start cultivating that, it becomes easier and more clear to say no to some of those crocodiles, or to say, you know, to start being like, crocodile, you need to be 10 feet away. Or today, mm-hmm. I don't want to hear those criticisms, mom. I'm not in a great place for it. Mm-hmm. So no, thank you. Or I'm going to hang up the phone now. And so I think as we can develop boundaries within ourselves, really, and to be very clear about what those are, it becomes, I don't know about easier, but we've got like a guidepost to be able to start implementing them as in our relationships with other people.
Well, and what's so important about that is, you know, because people come to me and they say, oh, you know, what are 10 red flags? And if I watch out for those 10 red flags, then I can be toxic person proof and I don't have to worry about.
Is it that easy? What are the 10 red flags?
I wish it were that easy. You know, and what I say is we tend to do this obsessive study about toxic personalities, but what we don't study is ourselves and our bodies. Exactly. And what do we pick up on? How do we feel around a crocodile versus not being around a crocodile?
100%.
And if you don't feel those feelings again, there is no red flag list in the entire world that can help you. There is no shortcut to getting back in your body.
Yeah. Very well said.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's true. It is true. And I wish it wasn't. I wish it was as easy as don't worry, put these three words in your dating profile and whatever, yeah, and you're magically, you know, I wish it were that easy.
But the plus side is that we become, you know, I don't really even use the word empowered because I think it's really just overused, but we become like who we actually are, and our ability to discern mm-hmm. becomes really good. And that is a huge gift. It's such a great skill to work on developing.
Absolutely. I said, you know, in my book, it says if there was a party trick, it's like, oh, I wish I could fly. I wish I could this. And it's like, that's my party trick. And that's the party trick I want mm-hmm. is discernment and listening and not ignoring myself anymore.
Yes.
When there's danger around. So I loved the five senses practice and then the separation before sleep. What are some other like takeaways that we can think about?
Sure. So I think anytime, and this is a Dr. Rick Hansen thing that I love, is this concept of embracing the good. And I work with this a lot with people. And what I found interesting when I first started doing this work was people were like, what do you mean? And I don't know what I feel like when I feel good. So really start to slow down those moments when you know that you're okay, when you feel like yourself, when you're having a pleasant experience. And it doesn't always have to be like, oh, I'm so calm, I'm the Buddha on the mountaintop. Could be that you're really energized, you just gave a great presentation and you feel proud, or you feel anything like that. Notice the sensations of it. Drop below the layer of emotion and notice what physically is going on in your body. Like, oh, my spine feels tall. My chest feels more expansive. I've got more room in my belly. My legs feel strong and I feel grounded through my pelvis. Like whatever it is, slow down and notice those things, because that's back to that garden analogy of like, we're also growing the flowers, we're planting the seeds. So that, and because all of that helps us to come back to ourselves so that we have that discernment.
And I'm so glad you came back to that example. I didn't want to interrupt you before, but my listeners may have heard me use the word savor. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and that's what she's talking about, that if you have the flowers and savoring good experiences, yes. In my Wonders Woman group, we have Savor Sunday, and we're all supposed to like post things or like intentionally savor things, intentionally pay attention to those flowers so that we do remember. And I had a conversation with someone today and I said, well, they were talking about having that movie in their head. And I said, well, when is the last time you felt happy or relaxed or in your body? Do you remember what you were doing or who you were at that point? And the pattern that we had come across is that they would find a new relationship. They would find someone else to focus on. So they kind of sidestepped of focusing on themselves and feeling their own body, because they would find someone else to feel really, like literally and figuratively. What advice would you give to that person?
Take a break from dating. Probably.
To be honest. Yeah. Simple. Yeah. And what advice would you give to them as far as learning how that savoring process, learning how to focus on those flowers, learning how to remember what your body, to be able to relax.
Yeah.
And to remember what your body feels like in a relaxed state rather than that hypervigilance.
I think you hit the nail on the head with savoring. You've got to linger in those moments and not like it's you're trying to grab onto them and hold them so tightly, but you've got to slow down. And again, this can be a little bit scary or a lot scary. And if it is, please work with someone. But as much as you can, focus on, try to stay with it for, 3 to 5 breaths. Try to stay with it for 30 seconds. And it's a great time again to engage your senses. What am I seeing in this moment? Practice that visual orienting. That can be really helpful too if we are in that situation of trying to identify if there's a crocodile in the room.
Yes.
Like go ahead and let yourself sort of soft gaze around. And if there isn't one in there, but your body is still reacting like there is, press your feet into the ground, physically look and touch your body, like look out and touch your body. This is my body. This is my adult body here now in this moment. That can be really helpful to bring us back into the present. And I'm sort of losing my train of focus with your question, but as much as we can slow down, and it sounds so simple, but how easy is that? It's not easy for us. We are in this hypervigilant culture where slowing down is not rewarded. It's not, we don't think it's a good thing. Slow down when you're dead. I mean, I hear stuff like that. Like, that's so stupid. What are you talking about?
Well, I did Brendon Burchard's high performance coaching, which is a very high level, you know, and I thought, okay, I'm going to pay all this money to do like the most productive, help hyper-vigilant, productive. I want to be more productive and get more done. And I swear to you, every single coach I've ever had, I even had a client this week and they said, I hope you're taking time to rest. You seem awfully busy and productive. And it's like this message from you. So it's funny that we are here today. And, you know, the consistent scream from the universe in my own life has been that concept of slowing down. And I even think the first time we met, I said, oh, we're not recording this hour. And you're like, great, you can take a break. And I was like, that's one of the choices.
It's tough, you know, especially as well, you know, you're a business owner, you got things to do. There's a never ending list. It is building the rest is so important, but it's difficult sometimes.
It is. And I will say to you, I took the entire Sunday off.
Good job.
And I read a fiction book this week.
Oh, what'd you read?
I don't remember, but it's very good. It was like 5 years or something. And it was about this girl and she has a dream of a flash from 5 years forward. And she was always a planner and hypervigilant. And this dream like showed her that her future was not going to be what she thought. It was very good. But it was a good practice for me to slow down and because I get lost in the book. And I think finding those things other than television or screens that you can get lost in, whether it be in a paintbrush, in writing, you know, not for work, but, you know, pleasure writing or something, moving. Yeah. Dancing, whatever it is, like finding something to lose yourself in is that.
Yeah. It's like, I think that helps to bring us into sort of a flow state, which really is the more relaxed brainwave state. And that's where we tend to have better ideas. Mm-hmm. We're more creative. We feel better. We feel the expansive quality of our nature.
And we get into that feminine nature too. You know, I joke that if you are dating, you know, your dating brand of hard work and mama may not be giving you or like hard nosed or whatever is, or like I'm in survival or I'm healing or, you know, that may not be giving off the energy that you would hope to.
Yeah.
To give off. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Alice, tell us where people can find out more about you. And I would love to get that Rick Hansen, those tips, and we'll put those in the show notes as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my website is kirbymethodconsulting.com. I'm really active on Facebook, Alice Kirby. My last name is spelled K-E-R-B-Y. Instagram, DR as in Dr. Alice Kirby. Those are my main platforms. I'm on LinkedIn as well, Dr. Alice Kirby. I'm probably most active on Facebook and LinkedIn these days, but yeah, I'm around. Check out my website. I have a Facebook group called the Self Love Project. You are welcome to come and join that group. I lead a meditation every Monday. I post a research article every Wednesday. And then we've got some just kind of nice activities going on in the group. I have guest speakers and things like that throughout the year.
Awesome. Thank you so much for helping us a bit on our journey to become toxic person proof.
Thank you.
Hello, wonderful. This is Sarah, and I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. I know that there was something that you can take away to help you get past the past, get real about the present, or get serious about your future. And if I did my job, then hopefully it will help you with all three. If you are not in my Facebook group, Finding Love and Success After a Toxic Relationship, then consider this your personal invitation from me. I'm there live, there's tons of support, and most importantly, tons more information to help you on your journey to become toxic person proof.